It's going.
It's going.
Hello, everybody. Welcome Hello. Back. Today we're talking about
a new anthology series.
Yeah.
I think this will be the anthology series where we nail it, because, you know, the first one we did was them, and like it, that was really great, but it was also very,
very
emotionally
dark.
Charged and difficult to watch and challenging. And then we went too far in the other direction, and we tried to watch Junji Ito, and that ended up being a pile of silly nonsense.
Hey, at least it was new when it came out. Like, we started watching it, right? Because you never know with those ones. At least.
We took a risk.
With this one, we're going over some episodes in Cabinet of Curiosities, and it's on Netflix. But
yes,
It has been recommended to me by many people, so I know for a fact that it's going to have many, many good episodes, and this director is sort of... I don't know. He's just good. Everything he does, I tend to like it. So he's a safer bet, I think, than
other things we were watching. Well, everything Guillermo del Toro makes, you know, he's going to do it with like complete enthusiasm. And this series is really great that he is showcasing other directors that he admires their work, and he's helping to get their names out there. And the episode we're going to be watching is The Outside, and he has a little Hitchcockian intro where he kind of...
I love like, that, yeah.
It's so cute. He coyly talks about it. He looks like a teddy bear, so...
Yeah.
He'd be a great hugger. You don't just hug him.
Yeah. He would give those bear hugs.
Yeah, and so he just talks about the episode, and at the end of every little monologue he has, he puts down a little wooden sculpture of the director for the episode, and he says, "This is brought to you by blah blah blah." And it's such a cute and really great way to just make sure the audience understands that there's someone who made this. This is a person's story directed by them. And it's such a great way to allow lesser known directors and story writers to be showcased. And so,
yeah, it's like he's just facilitating. He's facilitating people he thinks are good. And for the one that we watched this time, we watched episode 4 called The Outside, and it was directed by Anna Lily Amirpour. And it's actually based on a webcomic by Emily Carroll. And it's a 2016 webcomic called Some Other Animals Meet. So if you're curious, you can go check that out. I didn't actually know that until I started researching it, but I'm curious to read it as well. Apparently she has some webcomics that went viral, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good for her. Is that the same person who directed it, or is it a different person? Okay.
No, the webcomic is done by Emily Carroll, and it was directed by Anna Lily Amirpour. So two ladies.
Yeah.
Love a good lady director.
Hey, you know what? It's nice when women get a chance to create horror, because I think a lot of the time it's like, oh, well, horror is messed up, so that's not something for women to talk about or do compared, you know. I think it's probably a very male-based industry for the most part.
I think so. I think women bring like a much different perspective, which can be very needed at times. Like, this is definitely a good episode to have a female perspective on, I think. And
well, it was only created because there was a female perspective. No man could relate to this and write this.
Absolutely. And that's probably why, to me, it was so well done. It's just a unique perspective you don't get as often in horror, I guess. And I also think of the director who did Promising Young Woman with...
Carrie
Mulligan.
That lady who directed the movie is going to direct the new Barbie movie.
That's awesome. Isn't she married to Bo Burnham, or is that someone else?
Well, that would make a lot of sense because Bo Burnham is in Promising Young Women.
Should have been Bo Burnham Ken. Yeah. In Barbie, can you imagine?
Oh, well, that'd be great if he was one of the Kens. Yeah, I would love it if he was one of the Kens because there are multiple Kens.
Oh, okay. So, it's not just Ryan Gosling.
Well, no, there's definitely like African American Ken, I know for sure, is in it. And so there are multiple ones. I think it's kind of going to be a very weird meta. We don't need to talk about the Barbie movie.
No, we don't. I'm just excited about it after seeing the intro. It was like a 2001 Space Odyssey.
I didn't watch the trailer, but just from reading about it, I'm excited because I know that they're taking a very parody approach to it.
Yeah, watch the intro. I'm pretty sure it's directly parodying 2001 A Space Odyssey, except with Barbie.
Well, no, I did hear that the trailer does parody 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's like a direct comparison to...
Yeah, which is bizarre for Barbie, but hey.
It's great.
It's going to be the next Lego movie, I think, you know.
I'm down. I'm down for that. I'm down for a unique perspective on Barbie.
Well, just in terms of something that's so kind of pointless in society, but if you put enough effort into it, you can create a fun commentary about the entire brand based off of kind of what it started as. Well, and again, the Simpsons episode does it best, where there is little Lisa Lionheart, where Lisa tries to stand up to the idea of Barbie, essentially. And because Lisa loves Barbie, but in this episode, she finds out that Barbie is essentially a vessel for sexism and it's run by male corporations instead of females like she thought it would be. And she tries to go to the original woman who starts like the Barbie version of The Simpsons, and they try and sell a doll that speaks properly and as a woman and like is a powerful female presence. But then it is outsold by the same Barbie doll that just has a hat. And everyone's like, oh my God, but she has a hat. It's like, that is exactly what's wrong.
That's exactly it. And that
she has a hat.
That vapid nature of society and of Barbie, of that, what all of that stuff kind of ties into this episode, actually. So
yeah.
I'm just going to get straight into it. So, episode 4, The Outside, stars Stacy, whom is played by Kate... I don't know how to say her last name. Masuki? Makuki? From Garfunkel and Oates. It looks Italian. Kate Masuki?
Yeah. It's definitely Italian. Yeah, she...
Kate Masucci? Yeah, that's
Kate Makuchi. Makuchi.
Okay. Kate Micucci from Garfunkel and Oates. And her character's name is Stacy. She's a very awkward woman and longs to be accepted and beautiful, like the vapid women in her workplace.
Yeah.
And they all work at the local bank. Like, it's sort of set up initially as like, oh, what are they doing? Are they like, they work at some, I don't know, some place that people... high society tech thing in like a town.
Yeah.
But no, it's just the local.
At like Wall Street or something. No.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. They just work at a local bank in a small town. And she has a loving and supporting husband, whom is played by Martin Starr. And he's Bill from Freaks and Geeks.
He's been around forever. He's also in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's right.
No, he's in tons of stuff. Party Down, which will be coming out a new season soon.
That's right. I forgot. I just watched an interview on that.
Oh, Party Down. And
and he supports and loves her quirky hobbies and interests. So the husband
they have
is
the
actually
same hobbies. They found their perfect match, but she can't help but not be satisfied because of the outside influences. She thinks she's wrong.
She keeps thinking that there's something better or there's something wrong with her. And they're kind of a beautiful, quirky couple. And they're definitely playing up both of their unattractive traits. So, they are filming Stacy, she's Shelley Duvall from The Shining. Like, they definitely are giving a lot of references to that. There is one specifically later on that axe. We'll talk about. Well,
the
about.
Very beginning, yeah. She picks up an axe, and she's looking very Shelley Duvall. And I'll say
she
that
she has almost, those eyes, yeah.
Yes, the big old eyes. And I did discover that she did have contacts in the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and... Yeah. Yeah.
Say her eyes looked a little discolored. Her teeth were not very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, her teeth are definitely not
Her teeth are not great. Yeah, she has fake teeth in for sure at the beginning. But yeah, they played up how giant her eyes are and then just how small her mouth is. And it just like gave her kind of like a bug eye type of a look.
Yes.
It's very similar to Shelley Duvall.
Well, and every camera angle with her is just so wide. And for most of the every close up in the episode is so good because they use such wide angle lenses. Yeah. It creates this warped kind of creepy effect because you noticeably understand they are warping the image. It's
yeah.
And that's part of the story as well. It's good.
And when, yeah, there's when you use wide angle lenses on faces, it makes the nose look absolutely massive and then everything else kind of wraps back. So yeah. It just gives like anything close to camera is the focal point and everything else kind of like wraps back. Whereas opposed to like a natural close-up lens would kind of flatten things to the point that you see normally through day to day. It might be a little bit flatter depending on the, you know, the scenario, but usually a flatter lens will be a little more flattering than super wide angle lens.
They also use really lower shots, so it's more unflattering because you get the chin shot rather than the nice Instagram down shot, which, you know, most people are used to doing. There's a reason why you go like this instead of this.
Yeah, it's an up angle where they're at unflattering position, so the camera is rotated up but positioned on the ground or on from chair height, whatever, and it's just going to exaggerate the chins, it's going to exaggerate everything. Not nice.
It could have been fun if they did it, if they used the wide angle lens in the opposite way, where, like, I guess because they don't actually do selfies in the episode. But if they did one where she pulled her head back and it became super warped, just like, that would have been fun.
I feel like they kind of did that at the next part. She's invited to a Christmas party and it happens to be the women that she's so envious of. Yes. It's at like the main
bank ladies.
The blonde one who's kind of like the head of this crew.
She's the Regina Georgia of the crew.
She's the Regina George, yeah. But when she like rings the doorbell, I think they have a shot like that where it's super wide angle and you can just see her standing there with the box and she's just like you're like waiting for them to open the door and it's sort of sad and like they make her look so pathetic. They really, really make her look pathetic.
And she does a really good job of being pathetic too. Just like
she does. Yeah, like, she's making like you said at one point, like she is such a sport for just like acting in the most unappealing way possible because she's making all the expressions that you know, you would, like, maybe make by yourself, like, in front of the TV eating popcorn. Like, it's not something you actively try to do in front of other people.
Yeah, you would consciously not want to do it, knowing that it would look ugly in front of other people.
Unless you're trying to make someone laugh, which I do on occasion.
You know, making people laugh is great for everybody, but it's good. Also... when you're rattled with insecurities, you don't want to look like that.
When you're trying to make friends that you're afraid don't like you. But anyway, she's just very good at making very like unappealing faces, and it's pretty funny.
She's so good at just leaning into the awkwardness.
Exactly. She leans into it. I love it. It would be a fun character to play. I think to be that character, it'd be really
Well, and that's her bread and butter. She is always an awkward lady.
Oh, I would love that. I would love to just make money off being awkward. It's like,
hey, that's a niche that most people don't want to do. So you could slide right on in there. 5 years from now, you could be awkward lady number one.
Hey, that is a niche. Like, if you lead into that, then you never have to worry about aging out of it because you never have to look pretty.
You can always be always awkward.
Perfect. It's and then like when people see me in real life, they'll be like, oh, you look so much better in real life. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Right, right. See, that's that is a compliment. You always be extra ugly, and then therefore when they see you in real life, they're relieved.
Yeah, and maybe they don't even know it's you. So if you get famous for being awkward, then you still have your privacy because you look like a normal person. But on the screen, you look real weird and awkward. So got this figured out.
You're going to be the next.
You're going to be the next awkward actor that hits it big.
So anyway, the name of this podcast, Awkward Actor That Made It Big.
It's a real catchy, rolls off the tongue. She arrives at this Christmas party and she's absolutely like just stoked to be invited to this Christmas party. And she's jazzed. Yeah. She pulls, cause it's a Secret Santa. So she pulls the name out of a hat and it happens to be like the Regina George, the blonde one. So she's like, gotta get a good gift. And so she gets there. And everybody is gifted the same thing, even though it's a Secret Santa. Everyone gets this popular lotion called Aloe Glow, and all the other vapid women are just so excited and squishing this disgusting paste onto their hands and wiping it all over their faces. They did a really so good gross. Job.
The noise. Just the... The sound design, they you know they put so much effort into the goop sound effect because
they use it so much
in such an effective way. It sounds disgusting. It's awful.
And the coloring of it, they made it like a nasty
pale purple.
Like a pale grape. Like it's like maybe they were trying to make, like in my head, I was like maybe they were trying to make it like a lavender color but failed and it just looks like it should be grape colored. Like, it looks like it smells like a grape, like a gross grape Kool-Aid, but it's really pale.
Like synthetic.
It's synthetic. Like, it makes you... Also, it made me think of, like, lotion that you get at really, really cheap hotels. You put that on your hand, and it's just, like, it stings because it's not real. I don't know what it is. It's like
I've never had that experience, but I will trust you on the stinging lotion in the hotels.
It's not good lotion. When you have nice lotion, you know that's not a good lotion.
People, we are here to tell you. You go to a hotel, you get free lotion, it's not going to be great.
It's not good lotion. We're here
Unless you're rich people, which are fandangling at fancy places. We get fancy hand lotion, in which case, if you're listening to this, give us money.
What are you doing? Yeah,
well, what are you doing? No, you don't want to belittle them yet. We need to take their money before we insult them.
One, can you give us money? Two, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah.
There we go. Perfect order. So they go there.
As long as you order it with compliment/insult, they will never notice.
Exactly. So Stacy's at this Christmas party and this woman is everything Stacy wants to be. She's like rich. She's got these devoting followers. They don't even seem like friends. They just kind of worship her.
It's a cult.
It's like a cult. And she desperately wants to be a part of this group. So she puts the lotion on. Yeah, she puts the lotion on the skin.
And puts it back in the basket.
Exactly.
I really wish they could have fit some sort of Buffalo Bill reference in the episode. They did it. Where there was some sort of basket to lotion reference. That would have been great. They could have.
That would have been. But that's okay.
Stacy. Well, the husband, the cop husband could be like, Stacy, put the lotion back in the basket.
Oh, damn it. That would have been good. Yeah. You should have been on set for that day.
Yeah, again, these are all the reasons why Hollywood needs to hire me and pay me so that I could write brilliant horror.
Yes, brilliant. So she's trying desperately to be part of this cult, and she immediately breaks out in a rash. She's definitely allergic to this lotion.
Yeah, as they're all rubbing it on in this disgusting cream orgy where it's like really close up shots of all of them, and they're all like even start rubbing it on each other.
Yeah.
And it's like really disturbing. So but then you just keep cutting back to her and she's so rashy and just keeps getting redder
just
and redder.
Red, immediately red. And I should also mention the present she got for the popular lady is a taxidermy duck that she killed herself, taxidermied it herself. It showed this whole scene and she's so proud of it, and she mounted it to a rock, and it's actually like pretty well done. It looks nice, but it's just not a thing you get for someone when you don't know them at all.
Not a secret Santa.
Not a secret Santa. But that's kind of her hobby. She's a taxidermist.
Yeah, and that's kind of what, well, it's ironic because she eventually gets taxidermied, essentially, at the end of
the episode.
Yeah, that's right. Or there's just someone wearing her skin at the end.
So we'll get there.
Yes.
Pretty close. It's not a very long episode, but so she eventually leaves this party because she's rashing out so bad. But she keeps trying to apply this to her skin over and over. And her husband is like, look, you don't need to change. You're already perfect as you are. I don't know what you think this is going to do to you. It's not, whatever it is, you're fine as you are. And Stacey's like, yeah, but it's not good enough. I need to be beautiful like these women. They all use this lotion. So I need to use it. If I use it, I'll be beautiful like them. So that's kind of her mindset. And there's pretty soon after, I think it's the next morning, she sees an infomercial on TV, and as it happens, there's the previously used bottle of lotion like pops open, and a bit of it like starts splooging out, and it's all
well
nasty.
And we forgot to talk about the part where she sees the infomercial about it, where she
that's what I'm talking about right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah because she gets the first bottle. It's during the first
it's just the one that she got from the party that's on the table, the coffee table.
The guy's hair is amazing.
Yeah, and so he's on this infomercial, and it's Dan Stevens from
The
Guest.
He is awesome. Downton Abbey. He's also in The Apostle, which is an awesome horror movie, and in The Guest, which is another great, not really horror movie, but fun indie kind of thriller.
Neon movie.
A neon movie. Is that what they're called? Neon
no, it
movies?
Just has lots of neon in it.
There is a shitload of neon.
That's
and
all.
in it. So it really lends itself to...
Yeah. But he's great. He's so good in this role as this infomercial salesman. He's so fake, but he speaks directly.
Nonchalance. You must understand that you need to have the cream to make sure that the ladies won't make fun of you.
His voice reminds me almost a little bit of Matt Berry from like the Toast of London or IT Crowd, if you like British comedy.
Yeah, well, or
What We Do in the Shadows TV show.
That would be what he's most famous for, What We Do in the Shadows.
But it's a TV show. It's not like he's not in the movie.
No, he's in the What We Do in the Shadows TV show.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, though. Like, he's not in the movie. He's in the TV show.
No, he is not in the movie. There's a distinction between the two.
Yes, there is a small distinction, but he's amazing. And he's Dan Stevens. That's his name?
Yeah.
He's doing, like, he sounds like Matt Berry.
The most pompous British accent possible.
It's amazing. Yeah. So he successfully sells Stacy on this cream, and she buys like a huge butt ton of it, like a giant box of it, puts it down in the basement.
A butt ton of it's a good foreshadowing to what happens.
Butt ton. I don't get the butt reference. Is there a butt in it later?
Yeah, well, it's like, remember the very ending when she's like doing all the stuff with the goop?
I guess so. Okay, yeah.
You see her butt. That's why.
Oh, okay.
You see her butt in the shot.
This is just such like a vague, I guess, comparison. I was like, is there something specific about a butt, or do we just see her butt? Is that all it is?
Yeah, you just see, I'm not classy enough to give like, not, or smart enough to give some sort of like, you know, important.
Okay, you know, no worries.
Between the two. I was just being very literal with you see her butt later and it's uncomfortable.
You see her butt, so therefore butt ton is a good reference.
That's where I go. Yep. that's the level of class I have.
Yeah. So she's continuing to put the lotion on the skin, and her rash keeps getting worse and worse, and she's picking at it, and it gets really disgusting.
The makeup on her neck is so good, and how disgusting it looks.
The neck. Like, she starts there's a part where it looks like she's peeling it off her.
That part where she starts pulling her skin off, like,
it's just really gross. You don't see much, but the idea of it's nasty. And she keeps having these delusions, like, the way that she's speaking about it is very delusional, that her skin basically needs to be replaced with the good skin. So she needs
shed. Itching
means it's working. It's like,
but the advertisement tells her that as well.
And, like, her husband at this point thinks she's absolutely insane, but is just, like, trying to help her. And then we see all the lotion in the basement, like, this giant box of it. All the caps just pop at once, and all of this, like, purple goo just is splooging out of all of them. And then just, like, pools on the ground. And then you start to see, like, this figure rising in the goop. Stacy goes to the basement and she sees this sexy blob lady that's made out of the lotion.
Sexy blob lady.
Sexy
girl.
And then she just like
miracles.
Walks into the blob lady and they start making out and it gets real weird and then
she's making out with her blob self. It's so gross. Like, how narcissistic do you have to be to make out with your own blob self?
Yeah, she's getting there. She's completely lost herself at this point.
Yeah.
And then Stacy goes back upstairs. The blob goes to the bathtub and it like liquefies. The husband tries to shake Stacy one last time from her obsession once he sees her covered in this goop. And then Stacy murders him with an axe, which is very much Shining references there.
Well, first she just stabs him in the, in the middle of the forehead with his scalpel, and he's like, why'd you stab me? What's happening? Oh. And then she starts to Shining him super hard.
She starts to Shining him, yeah. And then after that's done, Stacy submerges herself into the bath. And scratches off her rashed skin.
So gross.
Just like, it's so gross. Like, it's pretty good the way they did it. Because, like, I'm curious how they would have done this part. Because she is submerged in this goop. Then she walks out. And then she goes to her bedroom. And then just, like, is peeling off this goop. But it looks like she's peeling a layer of her skin off.
And
revealing, like, a nice fresh layer of skin underneath, so it's like, I'm curious how they made it look like it was sort of like a layer of skin as opposed to just goop.
Yeah, they would have definitely built a layer around her entire body, essentially.
Yeah.
And like, because she's completely naked when she's walking out of the bathtub, and she's like, has so much goop falling off of her that she just must have been encased in an outer layer of goop. And like some sort of like membrane
silicone
suit, I would think, almost like something you create
super
over
thin.
The person, where you could like pull it off, where it's but it's still thick enough that it feels
guess that's true, like a really thin layer of like rubbery plastic, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably what they did. That's probably what they did,
like
they
when you do scar makeup and stuff.
Yeah,
it's probably that kind of a thing.
Yeah, and then
really cool.
She pulls it off, and they're playing. It's like, I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sexy thing.
So she emerges beautiful, in quotations. Whatever she wanted to be is basically what she's emerged as.
Yeah.
She taxidermies her husband.
Oh,
she cuts her hair, and arrives at work, stunning her coworkers. And I should say, before she leaves, she's like, says bye to her husband, who is now, like, taxidermied, sitting in front of the couch watching TV. It's like, oh my god, it's so gross. So she gets there, and she stuns, she gets to the office and stuns her coworkers, and she is finally one of the vapid women, and revels in their attention and new shallow social status.
But also the very ending is a lot of her, like, you know, the very final shot is very telling. It shows the joke, I guess. It reveals what they were trying to do with the episode, where it's like, okay, yes, now she is what people deem to be beautiful, but she has destroyed her entire life in doing so and killed literally the only person that truly loved her for who she was.
Terrible.
And so she just kind of, like, is smiling, where she's sometimes, like, opening her eyes super wide, but then squinting to be more sexy, opening her eyes, and it's like, it's this really great kind of contrast between, manic
and, like, what she thinks sexy is, but her eyes are always kind of manic, and then she kind of, like, does a sexy face, but she's still crazy, but then she goes full crazy, and then she's, like, trying to be sexy, so it's, like, very delusional. Can I give you what I think my theory is of what happens?
Yes.
So my theory is just Stacy is delusional, and, like, we see basically Stacy's delusion near the end. And so my theory is when she got a morsel of attention from these women, she basically took that and ran with it, with the aloe glow. I think she ordered the aloe glow, but I don't think she ever really left her house after she got the aloe glow. I think she did murder her husband when he tried to get in her way, but is probably just, like, rashy and lying in a bath of gross purple lotion, imagining a new reality in front of her, and probably also justifying why she murdered her husband. That's kind of my theory. She just
fell off
the rails.
I think you're right in that idea is probably what the director and Lily Empor wanted to have, is that idea that, like, all of this could be completely fake and it's all in her mind. And you really kind of get that because, you know, I talked about during the movie when we were watching it, it was very Requiem for a Dream. And with the ending where the woman who wants to be on a game show, she ends up taking a bunch of speed and going insane and ending up in an insane asylum. And she has electroshock therapy. But she becomes so insane that she just thinks she's on the game show. It's like, I'm going to be on the game show. I'm in the game show. In the episode, all the walls of her insane asylum roll away and she gets rolled into the game show. And so you realize that, like, oh, she's completely lost it at this point. She is just off and her brain is completely broken. So I think that you could definitely be on the right track with the idea that, like, once she got the lotion and she started to literally talk to the guy on TV, which also happens in Requiem for a Dream. She talks to the guy on TV because he's the game show host, and she's constantly talking to him and she wants to be there, and he tells her the things she has to do to get there. And so it's like this shared psychosis. And I think you're absolutely right that, you know, you could perceive all of this as just completely in her own mind, and she
because I think, like, the beginning is all, it seems like that's sort of the reality that you, it sets you up for what happens later, because you see her at the start at work just sort of desperately wanting to fit in with these women, and she looks a little bit crazy, like she's looking at them and kind of like laughing along with them even though they're not really talking to her, and like these women aren't necessarily like, they are shitty. They seem like shitty people, but they don't seem like they're necessarily bullying her. They're just kind of like, you're not really like our friends, but our friend, but like, whatever, we work with you, it's fine. But once she gets invited to that party and she sees kind of like, there's like a little glimmer or like a little, like, there's a hope of her somehow being a part of this group. So she's just trying desperately to grasp onto that because it's, I don't know, some sort of deep seated.
Yeah, it's her that desire, she's trying to fulfill. Sure, yeah. But unfortunately, it turns out that essentially why she's there is because it fills out the numbers.
Yeah.
And because it's never said, but if you think about it, they needed an even amount of people to give them the same amount of presents. And right. She doesn't do that because she gives them a duck. But that's like, that would have equaled out the same amount of people if she gave the same present that everyone else did. So right. it was like she was just there out of numerical necessity, not any sort of personality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that kind of similar to what your theory is, or?
Yeah, no, I definitely, it's fun to kind of imagine both of them, where it's like, one, she is completely off her rocker, and she destroyed her life, killed her husband, and then she's now just kind of living in her own psychoses with this, mm-hmm. you know, but it's also fun to think about that, like, she got infected by an evil goop monster and
yeah, that would also be equally cool.
Yeah, and it took her over, and she is now one of the, she's the alpha goop monster.
Yeah, like all the other women have previously been infected by this aloe goop glow, whatever.
Yeah, and she was just chosen to be like the carrier of the most important one. And so you could do a whole entire story of like these goop monsters taking over women, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And she's just like the alpha.
I like that. Yeah. She's the alpha goop.
That would be great too. I would love the alpha goop monster storyline.
I would watch
as well.
The shit out of that. That sounds great. Yeah.
I love emotionally, you know, highbrow ideas of elevating, you know, people to higher statuses than they, but then I also love trashy shit where it's just goop monsters. Yeah, so
and it was directed very well. Like, I really liked
So Anna Lillian Poor, I it's funny because I wanted to look her up after we watched this episode because I didn't know a lot about her, but it turns out I do know some about her because she has made some fun stuff. I watched The Bad Batch, which is like a weird The Hills Have Eyes sort of cannibal post-apocalyptic movie.
Oh,
it stars a female who is just trying to make it in this really fucked up post-apocalyptic desert world. And but more importantly, she directed and wrote this movie I haven't watched yet, but I'm really excited to watch, called Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon, which we probably will watch on our show at some point. Well, it's a new movie that just came out. I watched a trailer for it, and I was really excited for it, and I had no idea that she was connected
to it. Oh, it's on our little wheel, I think.
Yeah, Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon. Yeah.
Wheel.
I put it there, but not knowing that that's the same director and writer as that episode of Cabinet of Curiosities.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's just kind of fun to find these little connections. And Guillermo del Toro is a cool enough dude that he's helping these people get recognized. And it's
really
awesome.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, Kate Hudson's in this movie, and I think that, like, she's looking after a little kid that may be a werewolf or something.
Cool.
But it looks interesting. It's a movie.
I'm looking at...
Yeah. Oh, no. Please.
Oh, I'm looking at The Bad Batch right now, and it's kind of sad because the budget was $6 million, but it only made $200,000.
Yeah. Well, I think it made it on the Shudder, and that's when I watched it. So hopefully it made more.
Oh, okay. Hopefully it's making more on Shudder. I guess box office sales aren't really reliable anymore.
No, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, you can now sell your product to the specific audience that will watch it. And, you know, you'll make more money than you would just trying to sell it to a generic audience.
Yeah.
So.
Curious about that now. Because I like her directing style. I like how, like, it's very peppy. Like, but it's really quirky at the same time. Like, it's fun. It's fun. I guess that's a good word for it.
Yeah. No, I think she has a really good, unique directing style, and I'm definitely excited to watch more of her stuff. She also directed some Twilight Zone episodes. I never watched
perfect.
the new Twilight Zone, which apparently is terrible, but...
Yeah, I watched a few. It's sort of, like, conceptually, the ideas are good, but they're not... Yeah. It's like I could have done a little more with them. It's sort of predictable, I guess.
Yeah.
But Twilight Zone, it's hard to make something. Like, Twilight Zone was... Watching that now, it's predictable. You know what I mean? Like, the original one.
Yeah, I haven't watched the original Twilight Zones. I just know some of the really famous stories, and I know that they're creative ideas. Cool. Yeah.
The one that I watched not that recently, but the last original one I watched was the camera one. Or when you take a photo, it's like you discover how that person dies.
Oh my god, that's an episode of Are You Afraid in the Dark? I bet that person who wrote it liked Are You Afraid of the Dark? The Canadian horror anthology classic.
No, this is the original Twilight Zone, though.
Oh, this is the original one. Oh, okay. Yeah. So that means Are You Afraid of the Dark stole that. I thought you were talking about the new
No. It's the old ones. They have the old
Twilight Zone's
like,
awesome. I love the old... No, I'm talking about the new Twilight Zone.
I know. I'm just saying, like, some of the old episodes... It's hard to redo something that's that old and classic because when that was made, it was new and original and it was fresh and exciting. But watching it now in 2020, whatever, it's like you can kind of predict what's going to happen because we've done so much now. So like trying to redo something that's such a classic in a new format is very difficult because it's not going to be as revolutionary as that was. It's just not.
Well, and I think that's where they failed with the idea of the new show in general, because the whole point of it is essentially Guillermo del Toro show, where it's just a bunch of writers, directors who get to create their own episode, and they are based off of people who have a good track record of that. And you just see where they go with it. Some of them will be good, some of them will be bad, but...
Yeah.
You at least know that it will be a unique perspective with a new idea. Not,
yeah, that's true.
Oh, we're just going to make... Because the Twilight Zone, there should never be a remake of a Twilight Zone episode. Every Twilight Zone episode should be its own thing. And the fact they were trying to copy old Twilight Zone episodes kind of made me sad right from the beginning.
Oh, I didn't even know that, but... Yeah.
Well, yeah, the very first episode was the William Shatner one where he was up in the airplane. The gremlin was ripping up the airplane.
I didn't watch many. I think I watched it on TV. Like, my mom used to have cable, and it was just on, like, the new Twilight Zone. So I just watched it in a random order. So I don't know. But, it's, this is the way to do it, I think. Cabinet of Curiosities is the perfect
anthology.
It's the perfect format to showcase new directors, and I think it's like sort of the perfect way to do it, you know, because it feels like Guillermo del Toro, he's really facilitating actors' creativity and originality. Like, they don't have to fit a specific style, it's their style, so it's nice. They all get to shine in whatever way they want to.
Yeah, and that's why I love Guillermo del Toro. He is just a wonderful man that has, like,
I don't know how to say his name.
I don't even know if I'm saying it right. It's such a hard Guillermo del Toro.
Sound like I'm some sort of gangster.
Don't worry. Then no one will think we're gangsters. It's all right. They'll just think we're stupid.
What do you mean?
I am
such a gangster.
Yeah, as you sip out of your tea mug. You could be a hardcore gangster if you sipped out of a tea mug and, like, aggressively. You gotta learn how to do that. Like, intimidating tea sipping. Exactly. You nailed it.
I'm so hardcore. Well, we're at a 45-minute mark now, so... And we've
gone
through the
episode.
Length
of the episode, so... let's
Perfect! Perfect! Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and I hope you all have seen or plan to see some of the episodes in Cabinet of Curiosities.
You should friggin' watch it. It's amazing.
It's great. Until next time. Bye.
Stay spooky.
All right, podcast's over.
I don't want to be here anymore.